Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The earliest significant moment, I guess, in the whole scheme of things for our listeners is you losing your sight in your left eye as a five-year-old. How did that happen?
Yeah, I was born very short-sighted. So I wore really thick glasses, and I think the fashion of them might be coming round, but in the 1970s and the 80s, there were national health glasses, which were sort of tortoiseshell frames, and you know, everyone had them. They were free, I think. So I wore those, but with really thick lenses in them. And when you're born short-sighted, you have a tendency to get detached retinas if you get a bang on the head. So I wasn't, and I've only really found out from my mum recently, but at the time they didn't really know when I was 3, 4, 5 that I shouldn't have been in the playground playing football, avoiding getting a knock on the head at all costs. But that must have happened in the playground. And in fact, that conversation with my mum, she says it did happen in the playground, because I came back, my glasses were broken, I had a big bruise on my eye, and then ultimately I got a detached retina and lost the sight in that, in the right eye when I was 5.
Oh, is it right? Okay.
And then it went on. We then realised that I needed to avoid knocks in the head, and I had another detachment when I was 8, when I was 15. And then when I was 22... the retina just started hemorrhaging. But you know, when I've just told you that 5, 8, 14, bang, 22, job done, but that would suggest that there was some sort of inevitability about it, and there wasn't. You don't necessarily go blind if you've got short sight, or indeed if you have detached retinas. I just had multiple detached retinas, and it eventually led to sight loss.
And was that because you were leading a particularly physical life, a childhood? Because I know you were very sporty growing up, but as you say, it wasn't inevitable. So why did it happen?
Well, I had a desire to be sporty, but I wasn't allowed to play any of the sports that were offered in school. The mini rugby, mini football, cricket, hockey. So eventually I was able to quench my desire to be a competitor by rowing and also sailing. So I wasn't involved in any sports that might have damaged my eyes in any way, but I was certainly driven to compete, perhaps driven to prove myself, you know, to get up on the stage in assembly in school on a Monday morning to collect our medals that we won in the rowing, maybe to show to the rugby guys that we could also compete.
And those medals included a couple of Commonwealth ones, a gold and a silver, didn't it? Tell us about that.
So that came, you know, by the time I was 22, my whole identity was wrapped up with being a rower. I'd been rowing for the university, I'd broken into the Irish setup, and in fact, it was after I went blind that I went blind in 98, and then in 2002 the Commonwealth Games were in England, and the rowing was in Nottingham. It was the Manchester Games, but the rowing was in Nottingham. And as part of the kind of rebuilding of my identity, getting back in a boat was a massive part of that, and having the Commonwealth Games as something to go for was, and really just to get on the team, to row at a championships. And then ultimately to go on and win, we won silver and bronze, so you've upgraded
me to gold
there. But like,
don't let the detail get in the way of a good story.
Well, that's it. And I hasten to add that the Commonwealth Games, like when you take out all the countries in the Commonwealth who don't actually row, you know, it narrows the field. And then Australia got food poisoning. We were already celebrating when Australia were taken out of the mix, but you know, at the time it was hugely important as part of a way for me to rebuild my identity, to feel like the person I was before I lost my sight, and it was really a springboard for all of the adventure racing that came after.
So were you rowing along with fully sighted people?
Well, that was the amazing thing about the sport that I ended up finding myself in, because rowing's one of those sports that you can compete. You're going backwards anyway when you're in the boat. So I had another guy steering, and you know, maybe I missed out a little bit on reading the race tactically, but the guy sitting behind me would give me the detail when we should make our moves, and I was told that I was probably a better rower after I went blind than I was when I could see, which was strangely offensive and maybe a nice thing as well.
Actually, I'm interested at how your other senses are affected, because I've done a bit of work with guide dogs for the blind, and they were, you know, talking sort of anecdotally that actually all the other senses are heightened. Is that true?
I think it certainly is true in so much as you use your other senses. I don't know if in absolute terms your hearing gets better or whatever. And I think hearing, while it's the one that you naturally go to, you must use your ears if you lose your eyes. But I think certainly use your hearing. But the other one, which maybe isn't appreciated enough, you would know with guide dogs, that when you're walking along, you're feeling the undulations on the ground, the different terrain. You're feeling maybe the wind on your face when you get to you go from a building to an open road. So using sound, you're using feeling through your feet, wind on your face, all of your senses combined. So I think you're maybe just using them more because you have to. And the eyes are such a force; they tend to take over, I think.
And how much, if any, sight do you have now? Is it gone completely?
Yeah. I like to do things in good measure. So, you know, 100% blind. And I wonder sometimes, some people with guide dogs might have tunnel vision. So they could be sitting there reading on a train, and then they get up with their guide dog, and you know, sometimes they have to ship some abuse because people don't believe that if you're visually impaired, that people somehow are offended by someone passing off as actually being blind.
How dare you?
Yeah, it's sort of weird.
And I don't know, it seems to me somehow more heartbreaking to have had your sight and lost it than never to have had it at all. Is that how you feel?
Yeah, I know a blind guy in Dublin who's never seen, and we've had this discussion. He's not fussed on being able to see, because he's never experienced what it's like to see, so he doesn't really even know what I'm talking about when I'm having the discussion with him. In my case, having seen and then lost it, I would certainly like to be able to see again. I miss it. I don't know whether I'll ever entirely embrace it, although I've absolutely accepted that it is the case and it may never change. Mm. But I certainly miss being able to see.
So when you have dreams and when you think about life, is it all based on memory?
It's a very difficult one, because my immediate reaction was to say yes there, but loads of the experiences and loads of the people that I now know, for example, the Gobi Desert, when I did 6 marathons in a week in the Gobi Desert, I'd never been there. I don't know what it looks like. I don't think I'd been flicking through National Geographic magazines and having a look at the Gobi Desert in particular. And the guy that I did the race with is a friend that I made after I went blind. I have a whole range of memories of that entire experience and my teammate that I did the race with and the competitors we raced against. I have a visual catalogue of that in my head, and I don't know whether it's based on a collection of memories from when I could see or from the collection of senses that make up the images that pop into my head. It's so difficult to decouple what's real and what's made up.
That's so interesting that you can cobble together images based on... That's my friend just leaving the building. Look, you see, your senses are heightened. You heard some keys jangling then, didn't you? I bet our listeners didn't. Yeah. Mark just turned his head then to work out what that noise was. But it's really interesting to me that you can kind of cobble together images and not know whether you've actually witnessed it or whether you've created it. And do you think that's the same about your friend in Dublin and anyone, for example, who was being born blind and never seen?
Well, look, I think, yeah. You see, the images that we see in our brain, you know, they're not real. They're just neurons firing in the visual center in the brain. And I was able to, I mean, to give you an example of why your eyes aren't necessarily how we see. I used a device called a brain port in Wisconsin in the States, and it's a video camera attached to a set of glasses, and the video camera is attached to an electrode that sits on the tongue. And as I was able to look at a black letter on a white card, and through the little kind of champagne bubble electricity pulses that were on my tongue, I was able to see the shape of the letter, and that letter came to me in an image. So I didn't see it, the camera saw it. The way that it was, the images were transported were in fact through touch, and then that activated the visual center in the brain, the visual cortex, I want to say. So I was able to see the image. So perhaps the visual world is not necessarily made up of sight in its entirety, but it's in fact made up of experiences and all of these other senses that we have.
So were you able to see that letter because of past memories, past experience?
No, I think that was based on new stimulation via a different pathway, and that was through the tongue. So yes, perhaps going back to this Gobi Desert experience, perhaps it wasn't based on, it would be part memories, but it would be partly experiences combined, and our incredible brains do what they got to do to produce memories and images and feelings and emotions all combined to make us human.
That is fascinating. Actually, more of that later, because I know that a big part of your life now is this intersection where humans and technology collide and what you can do to that. And the reason we'll come on to that later is I think it's significant, important, vital for the listeners to know the next big moment in your life, as if being blind wasn't tough enough. In 2010, you suffered life-altering injuries in a fall. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, well, things were going well at that stage. I'd really become comfortable with the blindness. I had rebuilt my identity. I'd switched from rowing to adventure racing. I'd done a race to the South Pole in 2009. And
the first and only blind person to race to the South Pole?
First and only blind person, yep. And thankfully, a blind guy climbed Everest a while before that, so I didn't have to do any mountain climbing. That's too dangerous. But a British guy called Tony Martin, an ex-British Royal Marine, had staged this race in the South Pole. It was the first race to the South Pole since, you know, Scott and Shackleton and Amundsen had tried to be the first to get there 100 years before. And in the interim, expeditions had gone to the South Pole, many of them, but never a, an adventure race with multiple teams, and that's what I was into. I was into racing. So on the 10th anniversary of losing my sight, I had this opportunity to go and do my version of the World Championships or the Olympics. As I said, the Commonwealth Games hadn't satisfied that desire to compete, and really the South Pole was a chance for me to compete at a level that I'd aspired to before I lost my sight. And having done that over 43 days and competed in the race and had the experience, I kind of came back with this kind of long-lasting sense of contentment, and that lasted for about a year. During that time, I asked my girlfriend to marry me, and Yay. She said yes, which was, you know, remarkable. That's how confident I was at the time, because she wasn't mad into getting married. In fact, she said she'd already told me she wouldn't be getting married. So, you know, that's the level of confidence I was at.
You did it in the magic year. Yeah, when exactly. Anything was possible.
Exactly. And we were due to get married at the end of July 2010, and I was over in England at Henley Royal Regatta, where I used to race in the rowing, and I used to go back every year. And I was there on the second night. I went back to the place I was staying, and next thing I knew, I was two stories down on the concrete below, and I'd fallen from a second story window onto the ground below, and found myself now on the way to hospital, immediately knowing that I was paralysed.
How did you know?
I don't know. I've no idea how I knew, but bar the very obvious that I couldn't move my legs or feel anything. But you know, I was absolutely out of it. I was in terrible pain. Very quickly, I was on high doses of morphine, but I just knew immediately, in between blacking out, that I was paralysed. And in fact, the diagnosis doesn't, you know, the doctors don't come in the next day and say, right, you're paralysed, you're never going to walk again, deal with it. There's 12 weeks of spinal shock. There's lots of, we don't know how it'll play out, because lots of people recover, lots of people don't, different injuries. So I do remember, though, lying on the ground below the window, I just knew that was it.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.